Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at
Good first half planned, and it was, man. Got some crazy Tijuana stories involving the Federales and whatnot. And also, you're going to learn more about Elvis and Bob Hope, for that matter, than you ever thought you'd want to know. First, betonline.ag. August has arrived. Temperatures heating up. Sports action heating up, too. MLB, NFL, preseason. So much going on. There's only one place that has you covered, and it's the one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. Use the promo code PODCAST1 for your 50% welcome bonus. Oh, man, there is NFL preseason. I can't believe we're here. Take a little action on some of that. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get in on the action. Don't forget to use the code, promo code, PODCAST1. That is PODCAST1, or text BETNOW to 23-86-69 to receive your 50% welcome bonus. It is betonline.ag.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Saving money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
Rocket Mortgage. Support for the Adam Carolla Show comes from our friends at Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home is much more than a house. That's why when you find the perfect place for you and your family, getting a mortgage shouldn't be difficult and it shouldn't get in the way. And that's why there's Rocket Mortgage. Their team of mortgage experts, number one goal is to make home buying process a smoother, easier process for you. Quicken Loans help millions of Americans achieve the dream of home ownership. And when you're ready to purchase a home and it's the home of your dreams, well, then they can help you too. JD Power ranked Quicken Loans highest in customer satisfaction for primary mortgage origination 9 years in a row and highest in mortgage servicing 5 years in a row. Not too shabby. Get started online at rocketmortgage.com/Adam. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage. Rocket Mortgage. Right, Dawson?
Visit rocketmortgage.com/Adam and take the first step toward the home of your dreams. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. For JD Power award information, visit jdpower.com. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Push button, get mortgage.
From Carolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today,
the author of Elvis in Vegas, Richard Zoglin. With Gina Grad on news, Bald Brian on sound effects, Dave Damashek's here for good sports, and we take your calls about crazy Tijuana stories. And now, the captain of a pirate ship whose son, ironically, is scared of the ocean, Adam Carolla.
He's a land lover, I tell ya. Oh, get it on. That's what I meant. Got to get on. Thanks for tuning in, and thanks for sharing this pod. I love it when you guys come out to a live event and you go, I brought my dad and I got him into it. Now he's into it more than me. Blah, 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 blah. Good day, Gina Grant.
Good day to you.
Handball, Brian.
Let him come.
I have a thought. I have a few thoughts. I like your input on these thoughts. I was talking to Dr. Drew. He was telling me about having his wallet stolen. It's funny.
Stolen.
Well, Drew's got a lot of chick in him.
Okay.
And it's like last time Lynette got her purse stolen.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I always kind of wait for what the rest of the story is, as Paul Harvey would say. And now you know the rest of the story, which is...
It wasn't yanked from her shoulder.
I have this... For my childhood, there's two things that have been wildly corrupted. Stolen and raped. my boyfriend of 14 years, we'd been drinking. I picture jogging in the park when I was a kid. That's what rape was. You were running in the park and somebody jumped on top of you. Not knowing you've had a relationship with for 11 years. Somebody else would jump on top of you. But
well, give us the story, and Jeannie, tell us this is a wallet stealing.
A wallet gone right or wrong. Yeah.
Lynette got her purse stolen, but she had been at the mall. They were eating and they were outside at a table. Mm-hmm. And when they got to the car, they realized they didn't have the purse, mm-hmm. and then they went back to go mm-hmm. get the purse, and the purse was not where they left. It's not there. Mm-hmm. Somebody took the manager or something. Mm-hmm. It's a version. It's I lost it, and then it was stolen. Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what happened to my keys. They were stolen in the same way.
Right. Now, I think women have a slightly different version of stolen than guys do, but since Drew is a chick, he joins your ranks.
Sweet.
So he... had his wallet stolen from
out of his back pocket
from a Starbucks after it fell out of his pocket in a Starbucks and landed on the floor, presumably. And then he went off and did something else. And then he went back and it was not there anymore.
Stolen.
And I said, stolen after he set it out, after he left it out. It's still stolen, but it's a little more preventable than just being hit over the back of the head when you're walking through the park.
Yeah. Right. Mugged is different.
Right. So, and also I think there's a stolen from the inside of your house or stolen from your car that is a little more of a pure stolen than I dropped it and walked away. Indeed. But
wasn't there when I got back.
It would be nice if it was there when you got back. Now, I started to drill down on this concept because we have experimented with this, and others have done studies where they drop wallets with money in it and they're promptly returned because most of society is decent. You know, we have two things. We have too high a percentage of what percentage of our society are racist and what percentage like won't help or are bad. Most people help. Like they find something, they return it. Somebody breaks down or somebody's haven't gotten to an accident, they'll pull over and call 911. Most people are decent. Now, because what you're counting on is a criminal essentially finding your wallet. The keys are tough because it's hard to tell what value those have and what to do with those. But most criminals don't walk around staring at grout looking for money. They go actively rob.
Right.
All right. So
an inefficient form of stealing is waiting for something to fall.
Yeah. So if you leave, if your wallet falls out at a bus stop or out in the street or at a sporting event or something, there's a very good chance that the person at the sporting event has brought his 8-year-old son to watch the Harlem Globetrotters. Right. Not a criminal. He's a dentist, you know, and he's going to take the wallet and he's going to return it to lost and found. And that sort of statistically is true. But new caveat, new twist. Mm. Because we had society formally, especially in L.A., but Seattle, Portland, we can include, and many other major cities. Mm. We had society broken off into, I did at least, criminals, very small percentage. They're horrifying and do damage, but it's a very small percentage. And then neighbors and taxpayers and PTA members. Third group, homeless.
Mm. Wow.
Homeless are now
roving,
not traditional criminals, but targets of opportunity. Mm-hmm. So if they find a wallet and they're homeless and they need drugs, then you've now diminished a chance that wallet is going to make it to the guy behind the counter at Starbucks. And if you think about Starbucks and you think about homeless and you think about traffic, so now we're in this new world, which is know the homeless percentage-wise, know they're not criminals. I mean, they are criminals because they're shitting in the street, but they're not criminals. But if you left your mountain bike out front of the house, it might spring some legs,
sound
or possibly
gold.
Wheels.
Yeah.
And be, oh, wait a minute. And be gone.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's a kind of a low grade thing, but in a way, it's pretty insidious because now the things that you formerly, the wallet that fell out of your back pocket at the Starbucks, if you went back to Starbucks, let's just say Drew's on the west side and he's killing time at the Starbucks. So there's a massive homeless population on the west side of Los Angeles, and a lot of them go by the Starbucks and use the bathrooms for shooting up and things of that nature. Now, if he's at a Starbucks in Martha's Vineyard where there are no homeless, then the wallet gets returned, right?
Indeed.
Now, there's a third category that we all have to kind of keep our eyes out for, which is you better not leave that mountain bike out unattended for a few minutes or set your briefcase down on the whatever while you run to the bathroom or whatever it is, because it's the targets of opportunity, which are, and these people are out. Like, you ever see those movies where they're looking for a missing four-year-old, like, in a marsh, and they're all, like, joined hands, and they're just walking across the open field, like, poking a stick at the ground? Yep. That's what the goddamn homeless have come. There's armies of them. And since, presumably, all of them would benefit from whatever's in your wallet, and morally, they've made the choice, fuck it, I'm sleeping on the sidewalk and taking a dump on the curb, then your wallet is as good as stolen.
Mm. Yeah, you're right. It's that gray zone where they're not going to mug you and take your wallet, but at the same time, the wallet falls out in front of them or near them.
It's a found object.
Yeah.
It's gone. And I was thinking of King of the Road, the Roger Miller song from 1965.
That song's delightful.
It is delightful. And it's a song about a hobo back when he used to ride the rails.
Yeah, riding.
The romanticized hobo.
Yep.
Trailer for sale.
There's two parts I want you to focus on in this song.
To let 50 cents.
There's one where he talks about what I'm talking about, the targets of opportunity. And there's one where he makes fun of my cock.
Excuse me?
Oh, yeah.
You specifically?
Just listen to what he says.
8x12 4-bit room, I'm a man by means, by no means, king of the road. Third boxcar, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine. Ooh, worn out suit and shoes. I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies. I have found.
Here's where he digs into me.
Short, but not too big around.
Get my cock out of this.
That's insulting.
Man of means, by no means, king of the road.
Now he's going to start talking about what I'm talking about.
Every engineer on every train, all of the children and all of their names, and every handout in every town.
And every lock that ain't locked when no one's around. He's basically saying, I'm a pretty honest dude, but you leave something out.
Yeah, that's on you.
This is 55 years ago, 54 years ago. And he's basically letting you know that if he's wandering around and he finds Drew's wallet, he's picking it up. All right, now fast forward 54 years, and the same guy's a junkie. So now let's see how the decision-making process is going.
Yeah.
Short, but not too big around. Give me a break.
Thanks, Roger Miller.
Offensive.
It's an attack. It's not true.
Problematic.
It's untrue. No, why I didn't bring it up. So untrue. All right. So I, for some reason, with Dr. Drew, was talking about his stolen wallet. And then poor Drew had to go through the trash can, you know, that thing, like, because the cop would say, like, well, they just pull the money out and they just throw the thing in the trash can. I hate that part of life. I hate those people. Mm. I hate the, just pull the money out and drop it.
Right.
Yeah. To pull the money out.
Dispose of everything.
We're not going to dust it for prints.
You're lucky if the cops even show up. Yeah. Just take it and leave it on top of the tray, you know, and walk out. Just, come on.
I don't think any of us, having dropped our wallet and realized it, would happily take the wallet back with all of its contents minus the cash. Like, if the cash is gone, I'd be like, oh, thank God.
Cash does anyone carry anyway anymore?
Yeah. But just the convenience of canceling their cards, getting new ones.
Lanyards.
Oh my God. Drew was devastated because he had a $100 bill in the wallet that one of his patients gave him, like his elderly Jewish patient, said, you keep it. You always have this on you, you know? And he's like, I don't want you. No. And she's like, put it in your wallet and have it. Just have that $100. So he's always walked around with that $100 that he would never spend because it was hers.
Right.
I would have made it. I would have wound it up, made it into a straw, done a line of booger sugar, and then used it to buy another gram of Coke. But that's
what she would have wanted. That's what Nana would have wanted.
That day.
As you're recycling.
That's me.
Right.
I'm not Drew.
No.
True.
Very different.
And Drew's not me. I love when people really break it down.
I worked both ways?
Oh, yeah. I thought we were covered, but no, we got to go around again. So he had a $100 bill that this elderly patient gave him to carry everywhere. Aww. So he carried it everywhere. Like when you go to the falafel joint, they have the $1 bill on the wall, the first dollar. Other than that, he had like $130 or something.
Damn.
But what was devastating to him is he had two gift certificates to Houston Steakhouse.
God.
That was brutal.
Yeah, that's brutal.
That just gets a guy where it counts, right?
Yeah, that's a good steakhouse. Oh, yeah, Houston's a good restaurant.
And he could have, and he didn't have his name on it or anything. Like, it wasn't registered. It was just, that's
like
what
cash.
He had. That's right. Brutal. So, and the guy probably threw that away. So this third entity of non-criminals, but there's so many more of them, and they're just walking around looking, waiting to see if your kid's bike is out front of the house to grab it. Yep. Not what you want for a city or a society.
Oh, no.
We got that going for us.
No pun intended. Drew should stake out Houston's and wait for the guy. You see a guy coming in who clearly doesn't belong.
Gary found the follow-up to this song, Queen of the House. The song was so popular in 1965, a woman did a send-up on it.
Her name is Jody Miller. Is that a coincidence? Is she the wife of Roger Miller?
No relation.
No relation.
No?
Up every day at 6, bacon and eggs to fix. 4 kids from 1 to 4.
Jesus.
Pretty soon there'll be one more.
I got it's a factory.
Old floors to wax and scrub. And there's a dirty old ring in the tub. I'll get a maid someday, but till then I'm queen of the house.
All right, you can stop it there because this is sad. I thought that, you know, I said to Peter when we were working on my home theater today, I said, would you like feel sorry for me? Because I'll tell you what's sad. I'll tell you what's sad.
And he said, working on your home theater?
Yeah. I said, yeah, I would. I said, all right, let me tell you why you should feel sorry for me. You shouldn't feel sorry for me that I have to pay a full-time nanny to work in my house. I have teenage kids. And you shouldn't feel sorry for me that I have to pay maids to also come to my house and clean when I have a full-time nanny and no reason to have maids at my house. It's not like, well, Lynette's in Europe. She's got that big court case, the class action, the fire festival lawsuit. She's going to be
there for weeks.
I have people around my house who are capable of cleaning, and then I have someone else who's full-time at my house. She keeps moving. But I said, Peter, you want to know why you should feel sorry for me? I'll tell you why. Hmm. Because when the maids come at 9:30 in the morning and ring the doorbell, it's my job to let them in. That's why you should feel sorry for me. The
are you,
money.
Are you the only one up?
I don't know. It's a weird thing. I do sit in my office and I go, I don't think anyone's going to answer the door. And I'm paying them.
Yeah.
But I feel like the guy who pays them shouldn't be the guy who keeps the calendar.
Yeah, somebody buys, the other person flies.
I agree. I got to keep that calendar and make sure they get in. And sometimes I like to do a little test, but I feel bad for the two women. Okay. But I'll just sit there for a while and go, I don't think anyone is aware they're coming or they're not going to
not
let them in or interested in this. So I said, the reason you should feel sorry for me is because I have to let them in. That's... It's also on my list. Mm. The paying for them part, that's what
comes
dudes do. But I don't know about the letting in part.
Did he feel sorry for you?
He said he did.
As he was putting in your Dolby surround sound?
And then we started talking more about the theater. So I did, and I'm not getting any help on the theater, but I did get a phone call from Natalia last night wanting to know an ETA on the theater.
Oh, okay. Sure.
She's got movies to watch.
Yeah. When are we going
to
watch that?
Is this a separate room? Or is this like a living room?
It's a theater room. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Nice.
I said, let's see, what day is it? She's calling on Tuesday, Wednesday. What's the 15th, 16th? I said, about a year, because I'm going to have it up and running in 3 weeks, and then Daddy's going to go in there and slam heroin and watch Taboo 2 on a loop for one year.
You've earned it.
And then I'm going to come out like Howard Hughes did from his screening room.
Shoeboxes
under jars of urine.
You guys can slide some chocolate chip cookies under the door. That would be awesome. And I'm just going to sit there and watch The Outlaw and then Taboo 2 over and over again. And then 1 year from then, I shall appear emaciated. And then you can come in and watch Dora the Explorer. It'll be out on Blu-ray.
It's going to smell awesome, too.
It doesn't smell, Gina.
All right.
We got Tijuana stories to get into. Mm-hmm. Fondalier's got one. We got your calls about your Tijuana stories. Quick correction. Somebody pointed out to me in the Black Simile department, Max Pata. Do you guys have the Urban Dictionary of Black Simile, which was entered or called for? We're playing a Rotten Tomatoes game on Monday. We're talking about the movie Friday. Gina.
Oh, yeah.
Shouted out Terry Crews.
Wow. Right. Yep. Wow. Sure did.
We didn't really blink.
Uncomfortable. No. I thought it was just non sequitur from Gina. I'm so used to him by now.
It's a Lister, right?
Tony Lister.
Yeah. Galen made a comment, and then he said, "Well, actually, Terry Crews is in the third one." That's what he told me.
So right.
Thank you.
What is the def of the Black Simile in Rotten Tomatoes? This shall be my
Urban
legacy.
Dictionary.
Oh, sorry, Urban Dictionary.
Black Simile: a person of color who is interchangeable with another person of color. It was coined by comedian Adam Carolla on his podcast, The Adam Carolla Show, on 9/11/2012.
So it was not Terry Crews, and somebody tweeted me, so a quick correction with that. All right.
There they are together. You wouldn't mix those guys up if you saw them together.
They are pretty different.
Yeah.
Sorry, they are pretty different.
Well, if you were describing who robbed you.
How dare you? Who took your wallet from the Starbucks?
Well, you'd go big, muscular, bald, 50-year-old black man, athletic build.
Thank you.
If you were describing it, it would come down on papers the same. All right.
The sketch artist would be confused.
Yeah, I'd say there's probably more distance between those guys and David Spade, for instance, than...
That's
those two guys, but okay.
Yeah.
But Gina, we're here to clear the record.
I appreciate that. Thank you for keeping me honest.
All right. The Porcelain Punisher, Matt Fondalier's entered the studio.
Yeah, baby.
Oh. I think it's Mike. There we go. And now, Matt had a little senorita over in Old Mexico.
I did.
And he used to go there quite frequently when they were dating.
Is that girlfriend in Canada situation?
You wouldn't know her. You wouldn't know her.
Yeah, she's off around here. She's really cool, though.
Sadly, I don't think any of my friends ever got to really meet her, even though I dated her for many years. It did feel like that at times.
So you'd have to go across that Tijuana border.
Correct.
All the time.
Yep. Sometimes I would drive. Sometimes I'd just walk over, and she would pick me up on the other side of the border. It would sort of depend, honestly, a lot on our Sunday schedule at Corolla, because if we would do a show earlier in the day, it takes a long time to get over the border if you're driving. So
yeah,
pre-plan it and walk over those weekends.
You could – sometimes it takes sometimes you can get over fast, but it takes a ton of time to get back, time to get out.
Yeah.
I find the times that we would do it, we would normally park right at the border on the U.S. side and then walk over that weird bridge thing that went over the top, over the highway, and then walk down the weird circular pathway.
That crew.
And we go to Tijuana, and we get a cab at the border, and they just drop us off on Revolution Street, and then we just get drunk. Sometimes I feel like we walked back to the border. Can you walk from the border to Revolution?
Well, you stumble.
Yeah, we stumbled
but
back.
But it is walking distance. Huh?
Yeah. For some reason, we would hop a cab to go to get in, drop us off. But I can't remember. I'm curious how far that would be. But anyway, walkable, stumbleable. So, sorry, your story.
All right. So sometimes I would take my car across the border, and one incident in particular, went out, stayed the night with my then girlfriend, and came out the next morning, and my car had been stolen. And I
you gotta expect that.
I guess, but not having the car you drive over with was a very scary proposition. And thankfully, I had a friend who was in college at UC San Diego. And so I got dropped back off at the border and had my friend pick me up in San Diego and take me to a bus stop to get back to like North Hollywood where I was living. Mm. But the really crazy part is 1 year later, whoever stole my car sold it to somebody else in Mexico. And that person tried to register the car. And it was registered under my dad's name because I'm privileged. And we ended up – the woman who bought the stolen car wanted money in order to give me back my stolen car.
Wow.
If you're following all that.
That's how it works in Mexico. Here's the thing I'm laughing at. I was laughing for some reason. If I just said, I know this dude, and he got his car stolen in Mexico, and then he took a 3-hour bus ride back to L.A., would you go, Jew?
I knew. Definitely not.
I give you 5,000 guesses. You'd be Eskimo. You'd never get to Jew.
Inuit.
Car stolen to Tijuana. Took a 3-hour bus ride back to L.A.
I would guess Martian before Jew.
You would never, ever come on to Jew. It would take him. It would never happen. Sorry.
No. My parents were not thrilled with their baby boy going into Mexico, with no cell phone reception for long periods of time.
Somebody stole it. Somebody then sold the stolen car. Mm-hmm. I would imagine over here where we have laws and such, paperwork and DMV, like if you knew a guy at the DMV, he could stamp whatever, issue you a re-registration VIN number or whatever. But we got a bunch of rules and you can't just give someone $100 and get that. I imagine over there you could get that kind of stuff done.
Take care of business.
So this woman, I guess, contacted somebody who worked in like the vehicle theft unit in Mexico, and they would call my dad because it was registered under his name. He had no phone number with which to like call back. And essentially, I had to go back into Mexico and meet with the vehicle theft unit person, but it was in a supermarket parking lot, and I had to hand over, I don't remember exactly, somewhere between $300 and $500 to just get my car back. No hubcaps, no radio, no catalytic converter, I found out later.
Right.
This doesn't sound legit.
And when I drove my own stolen car back across the border without hubcaps or anything, the people at the border had a lot of questions.
Sure.
This is the saddest sequel to Sicario ever. We cut back to Matt's childhood room. His mom's in there petting a plushie of Bart Simpson.
Stripped down Nissan Sentra.
Yeah, when the motorcycle cops ride wheelies frequently on their police-issued motorcycles, law and order is not at the top of the list.
Or protecting and serving.
Right. Wow.
Huh.
And that was how many years ago?
That was probably around 2008 or 2009.
I wonder if anything's changed at all. And we talk about all the time, the societies that work on the graft and the grift and the ones that payola and everything, they can't form.
No.
They cannot move forward. You can't. How can you start a business in that world? You'd be a fool to try to start a business. That thing, when you fired that thing up with no catalytic converter, you must have heard it immediately.
Well, you know me and how tuned I am into the sound of engines and cars. So, of course, I immediately saw it, and I said, something is afoot.
I saw that scene they ripped off with Robert Duvall and Nick Cage from
Gone in 60 Seconds.
Gone in 60 Seconds. I mean, I'm sure that's just a page out of you and your dad's life.
Yeah.
It's just, Daytona, a Ferrari V12, 4.4, at right. maximum torque. Yeah, that...
Now, the real devastation was the stereo. It was back in the day when you'd have those cool video face plates.
Oh, yeah. They're cool, detachable.
But, yeah, exactly. And so
it was detached.
It was so detached.
Well, let's get Matt some underpants.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's earned it.
Tommy John is sponsoring the segment. This good Tijuana story.
He's just going to
top that, callers.
Yeah, TJ's for TJ.
I see. We got someone online. See, we got thrown in jail for drunk. Robbed him with a fake gun. Pulled over and extorted $20.
Well, that's every day.
All right, let's try Michael, 49 Sacramento. Michael.
Ace man.
Hey, man. What's going on?
Paul, Gina.
Hey.
Hey.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah, so here's my story. It takes place quite a long time ago, but I remember it as if it were yesterday. So I was in the Coast Guard, and this is back in 1989, and I was stationed on a ship that was deployed to escort a yacht race down the California coast to San Diego. So once we get to San Diego, of course, we were all like 18, 19 years old at the time. So what's the first thing you do when you get down there? You go across the border into Tijuana where you can legally drink. And so we did that and went in town to party. And of course, we get there. This is now at night and the bars were packed. And my buddies and I got pretty smashed. And I was sitting at the bar when the DJ announced that tequila shots were 50 cents.
Oh, they've gone up?
Of course, at this point, I had been separated from my buddies. They're out, you know, picking up on women, doing whatever they were doing. And I distinctly remember this older lady, American lady, sitting next to me, looking at me, drinking all the shots, saying, "You're going to go to hell." And so, like, she's had some sort of premonition. So I got pretty drunk. The last thing I remember is being basically escorted out of the bar by the federales and being placed in the back of a cop car, and none of my buddies saw me get arrested. And so I blacked out after that. The next morning, I wake up in a jail cell, probably 15 by 15 or 20 by 20, sleeping in a puddle of who knows what. You know, the plumbing was leaking, and who knows what else was on that floor, surrounded by about 25 Mexican nationals and maybe a half a dozen Americans who are all in there in their version of the drunk tank. And this is about probably 7 o'clock in the morning. And so I was in that jail cell all day, watching Americans get bailed out one by one as their friends came to come find them. And I, you know, like I said, no one knew I was there. And eventually I was the only American left in that jail with about 25 Mexican nationals, and no one from my ship, you know, my Coast Guard ship, knew I was there. So, my ship was scheduled to leave San Diego that afternoon around 4 o'clock. And so on top of being stuck in this jail and not knowing when I was going to get out, I ran the risk of missing what they call missing movement, basically missing a deployment,
right?
Which is bad news if you're in the military, and that, you know, if that happens, then you're subject to some pretty serious, disciplinary action.
Kind of AWOL-y.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Not a good thing, especially if you're in jail.
Did they, so how did they find you?
So this is now about, you know, middle of the afternoon, maybe about 2 o'clock. And I was convinced I was going to miss movement. And then I'm just like, I'm screwed. I didn't have any bail money. They had taken my money, you know, once I got arrested. And so I'm sitting there in the corner, just sort of minding my own business, not trying to make eye contact with anyone. And one guy taps me on the shoulder and he's like, "Hey, that's a nice jacket you got. Can I wear it?" It was just, you know, brown bomber jacket. This is how long ago this was. And then I was, you know, of course, getting threatening glares from everyone else. And I'm like, man, I am in big, big trouble here. I knew that, you know, if I spent another night in that jail, who knows what's going to happen to me. And so just about that time, three U.S. Marines walk up, plain clothes, walk up to the cell with, you know, one of the cops. And they were looking for someone, a friend of theirs who was unaccounted for. And I told them, I'm like, hey, I'm stuck in here. You know, I got to get out. I'm going to miss movement. And they said, hey, we'll just, you know, Give us the phone number. We'll call the ship. I'm like, you know, screw that. If you guys bail me out of here, the bail was $50. You know, I'll just, you know, drive me to the ship. They were going back to San Diego anyway. And I'll write a check as soon as I get there.
Speaking of movement, they have one toilet just sort of out in the open. How's that work in the drunk tank?
Just kind of one of those combos with the sink on top and, the toilet down beneath, which, who knows how many times it's been used overnight.
See,
So it was pretty nasty in there.
See, if AOC is listening, we put white men in cages too. You know what I mean? It's a two way street, is what I'm saying.
That's right.
Hey, Michael. I don't want to go too much deeper into this. I do want to give you. You've earned yourself some Tommy Johns. But as far as the movement goes, wipe extra good for you. Don the new Tommy Johns that I'm going to give you.
Yeah, I could have used them that night. That's for sure.
Yeah. Did you? I've been to Tijuana a million times. I somehow stayed out of a drunk tank. I think it's a little bit of a luck of the draw because
it'll catch up with you sooner or later. Probably.
I was definitely a candidate. I mean, I fell asleep in a sort of an alley that wasn't even an alley. It was just like downstairs walkway in between two residents. I got woken up by a cop, like a cop's nightstick. Like he shoved me and woke me up. But this cop just said, "Go back inside.
Move it along.
Keep spending."
Yeah, he didn't bring me in. He obviously could have. I was in no condition to argue with anything he had to say.
You're either a customer or a prisoner. Pick your poison.
Dawson, you used to volunteer at a Tijuana prison?
No. I did a missionary work with my high school for 5 days in Tijuana back in like 91, 92.
Did we talk about this before?
I don't know.
Something sounds familiar about it. How was that?
It was a great experience. Didn't eat very well for 5 days. Went to an orphanage, played with a bunch of kids, lived kind of in this kind of dangerous place, and worked with the locals all day. And then we went to a Tijuana jail and fed everybody inside. We brought them. It was kind of a soupy mess of potatoes and carrots and onions.
Now, here's how you can figure out if it's a good prison or bad prison. Do they have prison bars or do they have rebar? Because when they use rebar for prison bars, it's always bad.
It's an underdeveloped country.
It was old, and I would have to say it was prison bar. It wasn't rebar.
Okay. Well, that's good. That's a step toward the line.
We were told when we went in there, don't look at anybody, don't talk to anybody.
That's right.
So we're handing food through the slot in the bars so that people can eat, and there's one American kid in there crying, trying to show us his ID,
and saying,
"Please call my parents. Yeah. Please, I can't be here." And he was the only guy in a room full of what essentially looked like killers.
Jesus Christ.
Poor kid. That boy was Matt Fondalier.
it's weird that these are modern times. Also, in terms of neighboring countries, Canada and Mexico, they're getting further apart. Like,
very
how much
different.
Range? This is like, I got two brothers. One of them's, he just won the spelling bee, and the other one's in juvie. Yeah. Like, wow, that's a lot of range.
Yeah,
like,
for being the same
continent. They're heading opposite directions.
I mean, I don't know. Like, when you're one of these Eastern Bloc countries, kind of your Yugoslavias and stuff, I don't think there's that much range between your right neighbor and your left neighbor, your north or your south neighbor. God, we got some goddamn range, right?
Yeah. I think Dawson and I, the point of this whole thing is that Dawson and I are better than the rest of you, because the only time I've ever been to Tijuana is to help at the Siempre para los Niños orphanage.
Oh, that's right. Maybe that's the story
so
I was thinking
we're heroes.
Of. You were sort of the orphanage.
Yeah, we were there
as well.
To play with the kids with disabilities and bring them a washer and dryer and a bunch of appliances.
Now, I think the best thing that I got out of it was that it was the first time I ever had a potato and carrot taco.
Eat. Really?
So good.
Speaking
wow.
So good.
Yeah. Now, as far as disabilities go, are we talking about disabled or are we talking about born in Mexico, thus disabled?
Well, strike one.
Right.
No, these were babies with Down syndrome that have never been picked up. So Gina spent all day holding babies, which was also awesome, but very sad.
This guy got robbed, Brian from Walnut Creek got robbed.
Imagine a starving baby getting picked up by Gina.
Thank God.
The best ever.
Wah, wah.
Brian, somebody robbed you and with a fake gun?
Yeah. We were running down the beach one day. We were actually coming from Papa's and Beer back to our hotel. And my friend inspired a couple of us to go with him because he wanted to make food, you know, at 3 a.m. And instead of taking a cab going down the beach, we felt like this guy was chasing us or with us. Turned to my right, and my buddy just got absolutely hit-sticked, laid out on the ground. He's yelling at him, "Hey, you know, I understand Spanish, but I'm the only dude of a group of, like, seven white guys who does." And my buddy's yelling at him, no javo money, no javo dinero.
Right.
Yeah, so he's pinned down. We're freaking out. New pants situation for sure. And he's holding up his gun to his head. And my buddy, who's, imagine Spicoli, he just goes, "Hey, bud, tengo siento dolores." And everybody stopped, including the guy with the gun, and he hands him $100. And he goes, "Hey, thanks. See you later, fellas." Drops the gun and walks off. And we're just fucking frozen, 3 a.m., standing there.
And it's a fake gun. Yeah, you gotta keep going out at 3 a.m. Revolution Street's about a 20-minute walk from the border. That, as memory serves, although I've never really had my faculties, sounds about right. Hey, Brian?
Yeah.
Walnut Creek. Feel like that's a million miles away from Tijuana, even if it's only 180 or 350 miles.
Closer to 500.
500 miles away from Tijuana. What are you doing now? What's your business?
I sell construction equipment.
Ooh.
For a big global guy.
Yeah, man.
You can stay.
Mm-hmm. All right, Skip Loader. Thanks, man. We're going to get you out some Tommy John's. We appreciate it.
Thanks.
Let's see. Mike got pulled over and extorted.
But there's livestock involved.
Sorry. I hit the wrong button again. Hey, Mike.
Oh, my God.
Hey, man, get it on.
Get on, man. Calling from Texas. Pulled over. The guy wanted $20. The cop wanted $20.
Yeah, so this is back in the 90s. I went to college in Arizona, and we would go down to Mexico all the time. It really was not that big of a deal. We'd go down to, like, those border cities. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're basically set up for co-eds making bad decisions.
Right.
So we would go down there all the time. You mind your own business. This wasn't in the 90s. You mind your own business. You don't wear gaudy jewelry. You pretty much get left alone. You can do tequila shots. No big deal.
Right.
So we decided to go down further into Mexico into a beach city called Guaymas. Mm-hmm. And this is further. You got to go down south. You got to go through Hermosillo, which is a big capital city. And you finally hit the beach. And it's these beautiful, you know, amazing beaches down there. It's, you know, a bunch of college kids out there renting a house. And we spent all day, you know, drinking beer and doing nothing. So one night, two of the girls wanted to go out to the bars. And I'm somewhat sober at the time, so I volunteered to drive, you know, what the heck. So we're going out to the bar. It was my 94 Pontiac Grand Am, two-door. So we're going out to the bars, and it's me in the front seat, and I got another girl next to me and a girl in the back. And we're going out to the bars, and I see the red and white, the blue and red lights come up behind me. Now, at this point, I'm not drunk, but I'm not exactly sober either, so... You know, a little adrenaline hitting me at this point. So I get out of the car, and the cop there has an AK-47. I mean, it's one of those big fucking things.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, okay. I speak some Spanish, but I mean, I have to tell you, I'm just about as white as it comes. You know, you're thinking like, you know, polo shirt, pop, braided belt. You know, that's sort of what we're working with here. So the cop starts yelling at me in Spanish, you know, really fast. I'm not keeping up with him. And he goes, "You speed, you speed." And I tried to ask him how much, saying how much was I speeding.
Right.
And he goes, "Viente, viente."
Mm-hmm.
Like $20.
Right.
So I open up my wallet, and I had cash in there, and I pull out a $20 bill, and he goes, I tell the cop, "Is this enough?" So the cop snatches.
I would ask for his badge number at that point, man.
Yeah. So the cop snatches $20 out of my hand and turns around to go back to my car. So I go back to my car, and I mean, we're all shitting bricks at this point because, you know, none of us...
Hold on a second. I'm trying to think. You know, like, guys who own restaurants, the waiters, I still don't really know how this works, but the waiters make $2.25 an hour. And it's like, how come they make $2.25 an hour? Well, they get the tips. Right. They get all the tips. These guys walk out of here with $400 in tips. So then we just pay them $2 an hour. And it's like... You think the Mexican police force works that way? Like, hey, man, we're not paying you $50,000 a year. You're getting tips.
That's right. You get your 14 pesos
we'll,
an hour.
We'll tax you on those.
Well, they must work the grift in, yeah. like, somehow, right? Like,
yeah, I can't double dip like
just
that.
Just out there collecting money.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mike.
So, the thing is in Mexico at this time, I don't know if this is still the rule, but in the 90s when we went down there, the police were able to levy the fines on the spot. So you could pay your speeding ticket right there on the spot.
Sure.
It wasn't grift. It was just the cop was the judge, jury, executioner. Everybody rolled into one.
Yeah,
so he was just collecting the fine right there on the spot.
I get it, but I don't know if all of that made it back.
Yeah, was that logged and reported?
None of it made it back into the
well,
county.
What I'm saying is if you're driving a sweet Mercedes and you got the popped collar, then I bet the fine for speeding goes up a little higher. But,
oh, yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, cut to the end. So, the cop gets in the car and does what?
So we get back in the car and we're all shitting bricks. And we're like, they want to go out drinking still, so fine. I'm still thinking about getting laid. So we turn the car around, and this herd of cattle starts going across the street. And like the surreal thing. And the cop gets out, and he takes out one of these big cop flashlights, you know, the big old ones, and starts beating the cows to get them out of the street. And it's the most surreal scene in the world to see the cop that just pulled you over with an AK now beating a herd of cattle with a cop nightstick flashlight. And you're in Mexico and American, and it's all like surreal. We went to the bar and still got drunk.
Did you get laid?
No, of course not.
Of course not.
We actually went back to the house, and the girls were all drunk on pina coladas and being stupid. And another person in the house who was sleeping smacked me in the head with a frying pan. So
great
I
night.
Guess the bottom line here is if you go to Mexico, carry cash with you. That's the takeaway message here.
I've seen cartoons. I've never actually had someone hit me before. Did your head take on the shape of the frying pan after it was hit?
It did not.
And lift your sombrero.
Did you see
up?
Birds and Stars?
All right. I'm going to give you, Mike, I'm giving you some Tommy John underpants as well. I'm wearing them right now. A lot of underwear brands claim big comfort, but only Tommy John really delivers, man. I mean, I don't know. I can't go back. I haven't been able to throw away my like Calvin Klein midways because they were like $25.
Right.
They're super expensive.
Yeah.
But I can't throw them away, but I never use them. I just dig through them, and I get to my Tommy John's. Over 7 million pairs sold. 96% of their customers, a 96% customer rating give a 4 stars or more for the customer. So everyone gives them at least 4 stars. Legs never ride up. Waistbands never roll down. Horizontal, quick draw, fly, and stops all the fumbling down there. Feather light, air. Fabric. This stuff I use by the way, zero panty line for the ladies. I wear mine, hit my rowing machine for a half hour, work up a little lather, and then hang dry them, put them on next day, shot of talc, I'm out the door, man, saving the planet. Tommy John, no adjustment needed. Right, Dawson?
Hurry to TommyJohn.com/Adam now to get 20% off your first order. That's TommyJohn.com/Adam for 20% off. TommyJohn.com/Adam.
Richard Zoglin is here. He's a journalist. He's an author. And he's just written a very interesting book about Elvis in Vegas and how the king reinvented Las Vegas and the show. And knows a lot about, written a book on that. Wrote a book on Bob Hope. And I'm interested in Bob Hope because I don't know anything about Bob Hope other than the guy I know from the TV shows.
The USO and the golf club.
Right. And I don't have him in that category of womanizing and getting into trouble and that kind of stuff. It was back when he just had a bunch of writers and he just went out there and told his jokes, but I don't know. I don't know that much about him. So I'd be interested in Elvis and Bob Hope. And then Elvis, obviously, new movie coming out with Hanks playing Tom Parker, the colonel, and all that kind of stuff. So take a dive into that right after this.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. August 17th at the Golden State Theater in Monterey.
This is a fun one. Delusional.
Delusional. I do feel like that's something that's going around more and more these days. Maybe it started with pets. In the past, animals were pretty much either beasts of burden or we ate them. Either you got to pull my fat ass up this canyon side or I'm going to eat you. Or both. When you run out of gas dragging my fat ass up the side of this hill, then I'll eat you.
Adam Carolla is unprepared. In Monterey, August 17th, Golden State Theater. Adam Carolla and Adam Ray. Get your tickets now at adamcarolla.com. It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam, I've noticed that you never found time to watch Breaking Bad with your friend Bryan Cranston, but you have recently found time to go back and watch Partridge Family. Are you sure you're feeling all right? All right, man, good luck with that.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Touché. Richard Zoglin is a journalist. He's an author. He's in studio, Elvis in Vegas, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. It's available now on Amazon. You can bookmark us and click on through as well. And also, I guess, wrote a book on Bob Hope as well. So I'm interested in both those guys. They seem pretty different.
Yeah, they are. But they were both guys. Bob Hope had not had a major biography done on him, and I thought it was really needed. In the same way that Elvis's Vegas years, I think, needed a new perspective, because although people have written about Elvis a lot, and Elvis's, we all know, the declining years in Vegas and the big jumpsuit and everything, I wanted to remind people that that comeback show in 69 was really one of the great, great moments of his career.
Was he, when he was at the height of it, I think the reason he became a sort of a punchline is because when he was at the height of his powers, he was really above everyone else out there. I mean, the look, the sound, the movement. Yeah. Like, I mean, when he was firing on all cylinders, when he's in that leather, black leather suit, and it's thin and he's tan and his hair's pulled back. Like,
hips,
I mean, he's
moving.
Really just... Right. Leaps and bounds above anything else out there.
And also, people don't realize, through the entire 1960s, he was doing no live performing. He did a couple of benefit concerts in 1961, and then it was nothing, just those lousy movies and recordings. And, you know, the songs weren't making the charts anymore, and it was time for him to return.
Was Colonel Tom, you know, we got a movie coming up, we're talking about him. Was Colonel Tom, I guess he was addicted to gambling. I don't know. But was he an evil guy?
No, I think he was a complex guy. I think there's certainly he made some wrong calls in Elvis's career. I mean, to pull him from live performing and have him do movies was, you know, turned out to be a wrong decision. But, you know, he gets a lot of credit. First of all, he created Elvis's stardom in the 50s. A lot of that was the Colonel's very smart management of his career. And also, when it was time to return to live performing, first of all, it was the NBC comeback special, the famous comeback special at the end of 68. People suddenly saw him in that black leather suit and wow, he could still perform. He was still dynamic. And then, you know, the Vegas comeback, you know, well, it was a place where he knew Vegas. And it may have seemed an odd choice for him, but it was the way to showcase his return.
Was Elvis smart? I mean, I'm assuming he wasn't highly educated, but would you call him a smart guy or would you call him just full of, like, instinct?
You know what? Well, he was full of instinct, and he was great on sort of, you know, how managing his own performances. But I think he was a smart guy. People, you know, people liked Elvis a lot. He was well-read. He read a lot. He listened to people. He was interested in people. He was I think, amazingly down-to-earth, too, for a guy who had, you know, the kind of stardom and, you know, the crazy frenzy around him in the 50s that no one had ever had before. And I think he I'm surprised he stayed as sane as he did for as long as he did, frankly.
Did the Colonel outlived him by how many years?
At least probably a couple dozen or 20 years. I'm not sure exactly when the Colonel died.
Did the Colonel die with anything, or did he?
Yeah, he died. He stayed in Las Vegas, you know. He lived in Las Vegas. And his widow is still there. I talked to her.
Really?
Second wife, younger wife that he married around in the 70s.
20 years later, according to my screen. So okay. Outlived him for 20 years. 20 years. Older?
Yeah.
He was older.
Yeah.
It's always weird. But he goes on for another 20 years. His wife is still alive.
Yes.
I heard he was taking 50%. Is that true?
Well, yeah. He had a deal. It was like business partners with Elvis. And so he took 50%. It was not a good arrangement for Elvis.
The normal manager's 15 and maybe got dropped down to 10, I think. But to let people know, on the other hand, he did make him.
On the other hand, he did everything. Elvis didn't have a separate agent, lawyer. The Colonel was the manager, agent, everything. So, it was a bad deal, but maybe not quite as bad as you
was the expect. Colonel. There's a thing that can happen. It happened to me on a small scale. It happens. It happens that the people are getting a percentage. You know, they're getting 15%, and so they go, "Hey, every single weekend, I got you booked to go out and play a college or whatever." And you go, "I work all week," and they go, "Yeah, but I got you booked to play all these shows," because they're home,
right?
And
right.
You're going to the airport every single weekend, and there's a little bit of a danger of that, because I get it. Wouldn't it be nice to get paid while you stayed at home, and somebody went out on the road, and you got 15% of whatever they made on the whatever was? Yeah. But at a certain point, the mule breaks down.
Well, that's what happened with Elvis in the 70s. The Colonel worked him to death. I mean, he was doing Vegas shows twice a year, 4 weeks at a time, and seven nights a week, not a night off, two shows a night. Who does two shows a night anymore? And then the touring, and it just, he was just ground down and bored, and the Colonel kind of went for the easy payday. In Hollywood in the 60s, he kept getting new movie contracts. He kept signing new movie contracts, even though Elvis knew the movies were bad and was frustrated and bored. In the 70s, when the touring, you know, Elvis was doing great on tour and in Las Vegas. He was selling out every show. So why not keep doing it? Not realizing that the artist he was managing was bored to death. And
well, there's a penny wise, pound foolish kind of thing, that obviously he's the cash cow, but the cash cow dies in 1977. Yeah. You stop earning off him. So even though it'd be nice to book him every single night and do two shows every single night, let the guy rest.
You've got to bleed him slow.
Maybe he'll see his 50th birthday if you do that. But speaking of that, the Colonel, after Elvis died, was he entitled to anything? He must have had some contracts and some things, and there were multiple records sold after he died and so on and so forth.
Although, the Colonel sold his record contract to RCA. I mean, everything happened since then was not – Elvis had nothing to do with it. He got nothing out of that. It was RCA that bought the whole catalog. The Colonel in the 70s didn't think – would there be a market for Elvis songs 10, 20, 30 years from now? It was not something he thought. So he made a lot of money. He sold the whole record catalog to RCA, and that was it. They made a lot of money off it, but they're not getting anything.
Well, I'll combine the two, like I've told on the show more than once. It was the same way when guys won Le Mans with a car in the 60s, and they were done with it. Like, get rid of it. I don't want it anymore.
Yeah.
Phil Spector, to bring the music to the cars, he had a Daytona Cobra that he bought and sold to his security guy for $1,000. That car's $40 million today. Yeah. Because he thought, why would this be worth? I could, like, you go, oh, that's insane. But how insane is it? What is this old race car going to be worth in 40 years? Right. And what's an Elvis song? What's Hound Dog going to be worth when everyone's driving around hovercrafts? But I get it. But now we know better.
Yeah. And you also realize that back in the '60s, when Elvis was getting ready to make his comeback, no one knew if rock and roll is fairly young. No one knew if rock stars had any life after 30. Mm. And that's why the Colonel put him into movies. He thought, if you're going to have a long career, you can't keep doing rock and roll. That's teenage music. You got to do something else. And he was making movies, and the movies were making money. So that's why he did it. So people there was no precedent. There was no model for a rock star over 30 continuing to perform. Of course, today we know you can go into your 70s.
Yeah. So, yes, go ahead.
Well, the question is, my quick question is, did Elvis ever get mixed up with the mob out there in Vegas? It was all mobbed up at that point.
It was. And the Colonel, one good thing about the Colonel, he kept Elvis away from the mob. Mm. He was very careful not even to let him get photographed with sort of mob-connected people. Now, the Colonel, I think you couldn't be in Vegas at that time in the 60s and not have some dealings with the mob.
Of course.
But I don't think the Colonel had any more than any, normal person there.
Just transactional.
Yeah. And he was careful. You know, he was always concerned that Elvis have this all-American good boy image. And that's why he made him go into the Army. That's why he wouldn't let him, escape the draft. He thought that would be bad for the image of a rock and roller in the 50s. He's going to serve his country. And the same thing with the mob. He didn't want him associated with the mob.
Bob Hope. I know that's not this book, but I'm kind of interested. Also, just the fact that anyone who travels through Toluca Lake knows just like how much real estate that guy bought in Toluca Lake. Again, like the cars, like licensing, the catalog. It's just a bunch of farmland and orange trees and walnut trees.
For
it's
now.
The San Fernando Valley. Like, it's not worth anything. God, what the acreage is in Toluca Lake, California now. But what don't most of us know about Bob Hope? Because I don't know anything about Bob Hope. Is that the way he liked it?
Well, Bob Hope, was kind of the opposite of Elvis and the Colonel in that he was very forward-thinking in his career. He was a guy – he was the first guy, I think, in Hollywood to really create himself as a brand. You know, Bob Hope, he wasn't just a movie star and a radio star, but he did obviously the USO tours. He had a newspaper column at one time. He wrote books. He started to write memoars.
Did he host the Oscars a few times?
And of course, the Oscars.
His fame for being Bob Hope.
And so, he was the one Hollywood star with a logo that, the face, the kind of profile with the nose and the chin. So, Bob
Leno ripped that off, by the way. I like Jay, but come on, who are we kidding here, Jay?
But, he was very conscious of marketing himself as a brand. And he was also just one of the first guys. He was one of the smartest investors in Hollywood, and he bought up real estate. So he was more than just a movie star, radio star. He was a full-service Hollywood star.
I remember as a kid going, hey, it's Bob Texco Hope here. He was a brand, and he'd put the other brand in the middle of his brand.
Absolutely. And then, of course, the golf tournament. I mean, he was the Bob Hope.
Sure, Dinosaur Classic. Everyone knows it. Here's a weird question. It's not answerable, but I'm curious. How funny was Bob Hope? Was he an incredible businessman, actor, team of writers, shrewd guy? Or was he... I know from being in the comedy business that I can tell you that there are certain guys I know that are so naturally funny, doesn't make them rich or own any real estate in Toluca Lake, but that guy's a really funny guy. And then there are other guys who I won't mention who you go, well, that guy's not really that funny, but he's really good at shaping his career and he's rich because of it. But if you just cut him open, he wouldn't bleed as much funny as the other guy, although the other guy is sleeping on his sofa.
Okay. The answer to that question is I think he was funny. He was. He definitely depended on writers. He was the old school of comedians who, very frankly and openly had writers. He would joke about him on the radio.
Jokes.
Yeah. So he didn't write his own stuff, but he picked the jokes. He edited the jokes, and he delivered the jokes better than anybody else. Plus, off camera, in person – all the people I talked to who knew him, writers, Larry Gelbart, for example, said to me, Bob Hope was funnier in person than he ever was on the air. I mean, he just had a natural humor in terms of, you know, just his talking with his staff. He was, I think he was a funny guy, even though...
Was he a nice guy? Did he treat people well?
Well, that's a mixed. There's a mixed answer to that.
Oh,
question.
Really?
Yes, and hell yes.
You know, he was. Some people didn't like him. He was. He could be cold. He could be. He was had a big ego. He was felt. He was the biggest star. You know, he was above everybody else. So he was felt a little entitled, I would say.
Did he have a bigger ego than someone like Elvis? Was Elvis more insecure?
I think. Yes, I think Bob Hope had a bigger. It was more secure in himself than Elvis. Elvis was always he was rather modest about his fame, and he was always insecure. Yes, Bob Hope was a very self-confident, positive, optimistic guy. Elvis, you know, inside with you know having his problems.
I always have this theory about guys, and not so much with women. I think it's more with guys because. It's hard for a woman who doesn't look the part to go, I'm taking over Hollywood just because I'm this actress and I'm whatever. If you we're a little more aesthetic, and if you don't look right, it's going to be hard. But I've known that guys, I always just call it personal momentum. As I think back on Bob Hope, he'd be out there on stage like preening. He would tell every joke like it was the funniest thing anyone had ever said. And it was like so much personal momentum to him. And as humans, we're always attracted to those people.
Yeah.
The people that are out. I think that's Trump's whole thing. He just bursts in the room and goes, we're number one. You're number one. I'm number one. He's number one. We're all going to be number one. And then he leaves and everyone goes, okay.
Yeah.
Good. Like there's a personal momentum that Bob Hope. Now, Elvis was, you know, dripping in talent. Bob Hope, I feel like a lot of that was personal momentum.
His posture
was like he stood with his shoulders like pulled back,
right.
Like his chest was pushed forward. Like
you're right, he knew, and he was also very good about seeing where show business was going. You know, he started out in vaudeville. He got into radio. He did a new kind of movie in comedy in movie comedy. He was those road pictures with Bing Crosby. They were something kind of new in movie comedy. So Bob was and then television. When television came along, a lot of the big radio stars like Bob Hope were afraid to go into television because they didn't want to damage their radio careers. But Bob was willing to try whatever was happening in show business. And, you know, he was a very smart guy about his career, whereas Elvis wasn't so much thinking about his career. He was thinking about his music.
Well, I imagine that the problem with the artists you know, like, I don't know that Sacha Baron Cohen is thinking, shaping his career. You know, he's just wants his next art piece. You know what I mean? Like, I can think of those guys like an artist, or it's like a Bob Hope's a little more of a businessman who's his business is comedy, but he's got a little more business in his brain. And Elvis probably just wants to get together with some black guys and sing the gospel or something.
And the same way, you know, he did Las Vegas at a time when most rock stars were not, they had wanted nothing to do with Las Vegas. But Elvis kind of didn't care what the image of Las Vegas was. He wanted to entertain. He wanted to go back on stage. He wanted to entertain as many people as he could. So he goes on stage in the new International Hotel in Las Vegas, a showroom twice as big as any other in Las Vegas. And, you know, he got everybody into that. He got the old rock fans because he was doing his old rock and roll numbers from the 50s, and he was doing Suspicious Minds, and he was doing, you know, big ballads and old Are You Lonesome Tonight, you know?
Right.
He was doing everything. I think he wanted to bring everybody together, you know?
The beginning of the later stuff with, like, the 2001 song at the beginning, the drums beating and everything. You guys familiar with that?
The orchestral.
Yeah. The big, it was just like, I don't know. I love that. And I think it's weird. I think we need time. Everyone needs time to, once you get time away, then you appreciate a little more. I think Elvis died in a weird kind of, 1977 was sort of the bottom of this country's aesthetic. Like, it just was a weird time for cars, for clothing, for architecture. Mm-hmm. Like, everyone, every adult anyone who was an adult in 1977, if you find a picture of yourself as an adult in 1977, you'll wince. Because the car you're leaning against is a piece of shit. Your hair's fucked up. The house is an avocado, yeah. Burnt orange kitchen. Like, everything was a mess
same,
in 77.
Same with Elvis. I mean, in the mid-70s, he had... The white suits were getting more and more ridiculous. He was wearing a cape, you know, the 2001 theme music, the bombastic shows, and Elvis gaining weight. He looked as bad as he ever did. And that's, I'm afraid, what people kind of remember, because those are the years. Those are the last years of Elvis, and we remember the sad Elvis.
How many years was he playing Vegas consistently?
Well, from 69 on to about to 76, he was doing it twice a year. 4 weeks at a time. He cut it back to 2 weeks later.
What kind of money in those days would he walk out of there with for a 4 week?
Four weeks he would get for his first show in 69. He got $100,000 a week, and that was the top. That was what Sinatra was getting in Vegas, and he quickly got bumped up to $125,000 a week. Now, you know, it doesn't sound like that much today, but and he had to pay the backup singers. And he had two backup singing groups, male and female.
The Jordanaires was probably one.
It was not the Jordanaires because the Jordanaires were too busy in Nashville doing session work.
Oh, really?
So he used this group, this gospel group called the Imperials, who were very good. And his female kind of soul backup group were the Sweet Inspirations, whose lead singer was Sissy Houston.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
And he had to pay them out of his...
Whitney Houston's aunt? Or mom?
Mother.
Yeah. Oh,
Dion is the aunt, right?
Yeah. So, and also, I mean, he got a picture. So by the time he got to toward the end in Vegas, he was making what a week?
Well, it was. It probably wasn't. It was somewhere between 150 200,000. He was still not, you know, making gigantic.
Well, but you can buy in 19. You know, 76, you buy any house you want in the San Fernando Valley for $110,000. And I mean, just about any
he
house.
Was, plus, so. He was, of course, touring and making huge money around the country. And he was making plenty of money.
Is he, where is he in the posthumous money-making world? He's making, I mean, his estate is good for X amount every single year, I guess.
You know, I don't know the figures, but...
I think he's still number one. Forbes publishes his list every year of dead celebrities, mm-hmm. Top earning. Chris can look
Michael
that up.
Michael Jackson must have popped up there for a year or two or something.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I'm sure he's towards the top.
The you know, because the estate isn't making money off the recordings, that's why you see they're trying to make – they're making money off of Graceland and all the stuff that goes on down there. And they're making money off these movies, you know, a couple documentaries about Elvis and now the Baz Luhrmann movie that's coming up. So they're very active in maintaining the legacy and the – you know,
Michael, flow of money. Michael Jackson made $400 million last year.
Is that all?
Elvis made $40 million.
Oh,
enough.
Wow.
Arnold Palmer –
it's a lot
made
of drinks.
$35 million. I want to say this to all the dumbos who, I don't know, Bernie Sanders, if you're listening, and all of your ilk. When you do that thing where you go, a professional athlete makes $10 million a season, and school teachers, they only make, fuck you. Michael Jackson made $400 million.
From the
He's
grave.
Dead. He's dead. Most of these teachers are alive. Most of them.
Most.
And they're not LA Unified, not from North Hollywood High where I went, but many
the
are.
The vast still, majority.
Heart's beating.
Still moving under their own power. And getting. He should, instead of using athletes, he should use dead celebrities.
Yeah.
Because.
That's the point, huh?
It's one, okay, you get $10 million to dribble a basketball, but you got to suit up and get out there.
Yeah.
You got to break a sweat. It's not like MJ's working hard. It's not like anyone in the NBA made $400 million last year.
Close.
So there you go. So there's a new example.
Yeah.
These dead people laying around.
Doing nothing.
Get more than a school teacher? Because that is the ultimate, you know, like I said, putting a ball through a hoop or hitting a baseball. Still some movement involved
with
that. Bob Marley, $23 million.
Wow.
Charles Schulz, $34 million.
Ugh. Oh, this is the list in order?
Yeah, sorry. We got Michael at the top at $400 million.
Jesus, 10 times what Elvis pulled in.
Well, I think that'll cool off. I mean, I'm guessing because Elvis died in 77. Yeah. You know, I think it'll. I think
it's been dead for 10 years, man.
That's true. Arnold Palmer, Charles Schultz, Bob Marley, and Dr. Seuss. It's a well-rounded list, man.
There's no one in between. No one in between Michael Jackson and Elvis. Or okay,
that's it? No.
So wow. Elvis is number two. Okay,
that's it.
I didn't know that. I didn't. I'm learning.
But check back with us in 50 years or 40. 47 years or whatever hell it is, and we'll see where we're at.
The only one who's going to still be in the top five is Dr. Seuss. That guy's, the books are timeless.
Yeah. I know. Yes.
A quick question about the Colonel. We were talking about him. I've heard very, very strange theories about this, and finally someone who could probably just answer it and we could move on. Mm-hmm. Elvis never toured internationally, right?
Yes.
And that was because of the Colonel. Why?
The Colonel immigrated from the Netherlands back in, the 30s. And apparently illegally, and he didn't have a passport. I mean, the guy, he was afraid to go overseas because he didn't have a passport. Now, and that's why he always made excuses for Elvis not touring overseas. Elvis really wanted to tour overseas. And imagine in the 70s when he was getting bored with Las Vegas and with touring in the U.S., what he would have done overseas. Oh, my God. He was, you know, known all over the world. The Colonel would always make excuses, security problems, whatever. But he was hiding that he just had his passport problems. Okay. Now, the Colonel could have, you know, go to the government and
at
say, you know,
point.
We'd like to get Elvis overseas. Maybe you could do something about this. But he never did.
Well,
he did Elvis when he was in the Army was overseas, right?
Oh, sure.
But not performing.
But not performing. I get it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very interesting.
You didn't have to go with him.
All right. Let me hit Geico. Everyone's got the to-do list. How about you save hundreds of dollars on your car insurance? You don't have to go anywhere. Just go to geico.com. 15 minutes could be saving tons of bucks on your auto insurance, maybe even up to 50% on your car insurance. Extra money. Put that money in your pocket. It'll be the most rewarding thing you do at Geico. That is geico.com. All right, Richard, thank you for coming in and shedding some light on this very interesting story. New
thank
book,
you.
It's available as we speak at Amazon. So just go ahead and bookmark us and click on through and help the pirate ship. Elvis in Vegas is the name of the book, How the King Reinvented the Las Vegas Show. And grab that Bob Hope novel, autobiography, I should say, as well. Richard Zoglin, thank you for coming in.
It was great to be here. Thanks a lot.
Take a break. We'll do news right after this.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.